Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty on a Thursday. Excited to be with you for the next hour or so as we discuss, well, basically, I can't even see the latest news or any upcoming events or events that took place. No disrespect, Ryzen. But kind of wanted to take it in a different direction. As I was prepping for the show, I caught the recent Thrill and Agony release for UFC 269. So I had a wicked idea, like they say in the Northeast. Ran it by Goes. We're going to kind of go over that in the first 10 minutes or so. And then we'll talk about a great article that our editor, managing editor, Simon Samano, put together with the assistance of the whole team. It was really fun yesterday as we thought about 21 feel-good stories in the year 2021. So we'll kind of go over those. Change it up a little bit, all right? Be right back. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, December 30th. Last show of the year, folks. Goes, how do you pronounce Gabe's last name? Gudgel. I think I heard it on a conference call the other day with Nate. Nate, yeah. The Great. I'm sure he hasn't heard that one before. And I thought he said Gudgel, right?
I don't think he said it that way, but I think that's how you say it. He says it on his voicemail.
Oh, does he?
I've heard it before, yeah.
Well, I don't have... I don't work in proximity with him like you do, but shout out to him. You know, when I do listen to the shows, like I've been going back and forth to California a lot. It's really an interesting twist on how what he's done to our podcast. And if you follow me like on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube, I just don't like when my name is on something that's in conjunction with someone else on the other team. I just like giving the shout outs to everyone who was involved in a particular segment or anything. And I think I failed Gabe. We've mentioned his name before, but maybe not full name. He does do a great job patching this thing together at all different times of the day and night. His flexibility is what's allowed us to get the podcast portion of it out. You know, before we had the video thing going on, and the video thing will come back, by the way, but you know, there'd be times when we would do a Wednesday or Sunday night for Monday and Thursday delivery. And that allows people on other opposite ends of the world that are waking up and able to, you know, consume the podcast maybe 8 hours before the North American audience. It's due to his hard work. So shout out to Gabe G.
Yeah, Gabe is pretty amazing, dude. And I just found out on that call that he has a drones pilot license as well. I didn't know that he had that. So I could have asked him a bunch of questions. So did Manny. Manny has one too, George.
Yeah.
Gabe is one of the things I like the most about him is just how easy he is to work with. You know, he'll always find a way to do things. And if he just can't do it, he'll do it at the first moment that he's available. Like he's pretty awesome. So yeah, thanks, Gabe. I know a lot of times I think he does listen to this because they'll comment on stuff. So I think he doesn't just kind of go through and just look at the volume levels. I think he actually does listen. So, yeah, shout out to him.
It goes, by the way, you were all in. You bought a drone about 2 months ago, and you were all in. You were, you know, outside at the park, at, you know, out there in the hiking trails. And then things calmed down a bit. Now, was it just the holidays plus the addition of Little Yogi, or did you trade it in? I just haven't even seen it.
No. So I took it. I take it with me when I go to California, and the last time I flew it was not this last trip, but the one before that. And it's just been there's so you can only fly drones in certain areas, you know, so you can't like just walk outside and start flying it because your neighbors will start to trip. And what I noticed was when we went to California, I didn't want to fly it anymore after that first time because of those things that happened. You know, and I was like, better not be tripping in this neighborhood. So I didn't bring it with me on this last trip. But yeah, I've been wanting to go to the spot where I fly it over by Fort Apache. I just haven't been able to do it. Like, it's usually rain gets me or wind or something. And just haven't been able to go out. It's fun, though. Now,
are you interested in getting a drone license? Like, will you eventually ask Gabe or Manny and go, hey, how did you get it? How much does it cost? How long does it take? Is it easy? Is it hard? Blah, blah, blah.
Well, Manny had told me I should do it, but I guess I need to talk to him because my first question is, why? You know, I don't know what that does. Like, I know that Manny for USA Today, he would actually, he's actually part of like a real successful documentary on the border and flying the drone by the border and all that. And so, yeah, I don't know if that's like a work thing or what. Like right now, I kind of got a model that is just like a fun starter one. But, yeah, I mean, if it's not expensive or anything, I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, if that in any way is lucrative. You know, like, okay, let's say the city allows you to have a drone at some kid's birthday party, you know, some rich parents or something like that, and they want all the different angles of the backyard and the pool and, you know, damn, all right, we got to get someone with a drone license. Man, there's not very many of them. They charge $200 an hour or you know what I mean? Like, I just wonder if there's just something lucrative about probably the fact that there's just not many of them around.
Well, they fly them at games and stuff like that. But yeah. On my goals for, well, you can't really see it. March is drone month. So March is where I just jump into drones and read about them and learn about them and try things on them. So we'll see. Yeah, maybe that'd be a good month to do it.
Goes just reminded me of something. And I know we've yet to talk about MMA and the thrill of the agony. We'll get to that in just a second. But my buddy Woody was at a game last night. He was at SoFi Stadium, and his son, Logan, who's my godson that I talk about, the quarterback, he was there, and they were playing 7-on-7 against another team. So it was just basically the quarterback and his receivers and running backs running routes against DBs and safeties and probably a linebacker maybe. It's pretty fun to watch because it's high tempo, and it's all skill players basically. No line, no blitzes, nothing. The quarterback goes back there, and I think you have a certain amount of time to pass. You can't just sit there, right, for 20 seconds and find somebody. You got to get rid of it. But the fact that he got to play in the same stadium where in little over a month, that's where the Super Bowl's hosted. It's where the Rams and the Chargers played. I figured that was probably pretty cool for him. So he's out there, and Woody is doing the old Instagram Live, and I'm watching it, but he made the same mistake that a lot of people make. And goes almost made it right now. And that's when you're trying to show somebody either live video or show them something that's still on live video, you just got to hold it that extra half second or second. Because if you move it around too much, you just become the Blair Witch and you don't give people the chance to like soak it all in. So it's just a little trick when you got your camera out and you're taping stuff. I know sometimes you feel like you're in a hurry, but it's really not that much more. It's just an extra second or two, but it really enhances it for the viewer. I was told that because I used to do that as well. I would just kind of move it around right quick and people would be like, bro, you know, slow down. And so I've started to a little bit and I noticed the difference. So what he was doing was let's just say he was showing his son on the field and then to show everybody, hey, look, this is where I'm at. He actually moved it to his left to where it said SoFi, and then he moved it back to the field. Okay, so what I'm trying to describe is you're showing your son. He goes back. He throws a pass. It's completed. Cool. You hold it there for a second. Then you slowly move it to where it says SoFi Stadium, and then you hold it like just that extra second, like how I just talked right now, an extra second or two, and then you slowly bring it back, and then boom. It really helps people out. It's really good for street fights too. Anyway, all right. Ghost, so you ready for the Thrill and Agony recap?
Let's do it.
So why we're doing this is because I watched it today, and I can't think of another one that I've enjoyed more. Or maybe I don't know. I had my coffee and some toast, and I just kind of chilled out. Maybe other times I'm watching it on my phone in a hurry or something, but this one was really cool. It's pretty historic, actually, with what Juliana Pena did. So what we're going to do is we're going to start it, and then we'll pick a couple times to stop and do quick recaps. And it's 10 minutes long. And unless you see something really, really interesting goes, just let it go for 2 minutes and then we'll talk, and then 2 minutes and then we'll talk. And then kind of, that way it's easy for people to mark it. And when they listen to this, if they have their phone or an additional piece of equipment that they can do it at the same time, they can check it out.
Well, wait, you got to talk. You can't just stay silent for 2 minutes.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I guess maybe in case there's anything that we wanted to stop and recap at that
point. Yeah, like, yeah, after 2 minutes, we can recap or something.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Okay, here we go. Usually when I do this is when a Samsung commercial comes out or something.
Yeah. By the way, Rogan, DC, and Anik, they show them, and they need to change it up. It's almost like the same reaction, you know what I mean? Like, if you don't change it up, it's gonna look like you just always go nuts because you know the camera's on you. There's a good point of Misha Tate yelling for Juliana Pena, because when I saw another video that showed Michael Chiesa jumping over, you could see Misha going hysterical, but that one was a real good one.
The Kayla Harrison shot is really good too.
Is Kayla mad that the big fight is blown or that her friend lost?
I think that the big fight is blown.
Okay.
Right? Because look,
kinda, yeah. But I don't think she knew what Dana White said, that it was going to be the biggest one ever. I don't even think that's right, but I don't think she knew that. Although she did have dinner with those people on Fight Week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who knows? That's her sister right there. That's Juliana Pena's sister. Cutie pie. The team's going nuts. I think at this point is when Juliana finally kind of reacted. Remember early on, it almost seemed like she thought the round was over.
Yeah. It's like she wasn't really sure what it was that caused the stop to it, as most of us were.
You know what goes? Actually, stop it, because there's so many things that I want to say, and that's why I wanted to do this. There was a good point in time right there. One of the coaches, and what does it say? A minute 26 something? In that area of about a minute 15, one of the coaches just pauses her and goes, hey, take a look out there. Because remember, I'm saying Juliana's really slow in reacting to what she did. And one of the coaches was really, really smart. He's like, hey, take a look out there. And then they pan to the audience goes, and people are losing their minds. And Juliana was so calm in the fact that she was like, oh, yeah, I am kind of the champ. You know, like kind of like not to say no big deal, but she was kind of lost in that moment. And that guy, to me, it seemed like he grounded her.
I think she was still confused. Like, what really? What just happened? I think she was pretty confused on the whole situation. So we'll see. We'll keep playing it here. So here she is at the top of the cage, and she's celebrating with her team. And now she's really, really starting to soak it in.
Yes.
Letting out one of them primal screams. I mean, there's a lot behind that scream. I got to imagine so many people. She probably reads everything the way we all do.
Dana White leans into Amanda and says, are you all right? She says, yeah. I had to rewind that a few times. I was like, what's he asking? And she's like, yeah, she's taking it like a champ. She's applauding for Juliana. So is Nina. But I'm wondering what's going through her head goes. I wonder if she's wondering what we've wondered, and that she's just quit.
She might. It's so weird, because we're going to get to a very weird part for me in a second. But yeah, Amanda, I don't know what it is. Like,
and I think that if she did quit, it's because she didn't train very hard and she was getting exhausted, and it was just easier to go, all right, this ain't my night. We'll do the rematch. And I'm wondering if she's thinking that. Damn it, I should have been. Why didn't I call back Conan Silvera when he said we need to run today, or, you know, listen to my team when they said we needed to work more on this or that? Like, I'm wondering if the regrets are seeping in, or if she really gave us a great camp and the other girl just rose to the occasion.
Okay, I'm going to stop it for 1 second, George. Yeah. This is the part that I honestly do not understand. The first time I watched this, I didn't have very much volume. So as I'm going through, I actually thought I had maybe clicked on the wrong thing, because it shows Amanda Nunes walking back out of the cage. She's high-fiving people left and right. She comes through the curtain. She's happy to see her kid. It almost looked like she won. I was like, wait, did I click on the wrong thing or what? Even Nina is just kind of like by her, like, all right, you know, let's go. Like, it was super, super odd. And as a fan, the fan part of me, was very frustrating because I'll tell you what, Michael Jordan never did that. You never see Michael Jordan go through the curtain like that and be happy after a loss. You never see Kobe Bryant do that. You know, Andre Agassi, none of them people. To me, I don't know if it's just a different generation and maybe they compartmentalize quicker than everyone else, but I really thought she should have been pretty pissed off.
Yeah, I was thinking of Ronaldo. He goes down the tunnel quick too, although he's been criticized about that lately because they've been saying, hey, look, you kind of do it a lot every once in a while. Go to the opposite end of the stadium and applaud the fans that travel all over the country to root for us. I'm on the fence on that. I think they should do that every so often. But like you said, Goes, they're so intense and they're so focused on winning that it hurts their soul. Random Andre Agassi pull, though. Good one. I haven't heard his name in a long time. I don't remember him if he was a sore loser or not, but I guess if you're saying it, he must be. But yeah, so right where you froze it at 302, I don't think I've ever seen a cuter baby, man. She looks like a little baby Pebbles from the Flintstones because she's got the little thing going on at the top. But I was telling Goes, I don't want to be a hypocrite. Before the show, I was telling Goes, I just don't agree with bringing the kid to the arena. Look, to the trip, yes, because they probably are here 7 to 10 days beforehand, and you just cannot be away from your kid for that long, especially somebody, a little baby that's, what, a year and a half old. But more to it is, leave them at the hotel, in my opinion. I just believe you are at work, and yes, a lot of fighters have won with the baby present. She's done it before. She's held the baby before. I get that. She maybe wants to give that moment to the baby, you know. But I still feel like there's just more to win, more to gain by being at your absolute best and not having any form of a distraction before the fight starts. That's just my opinion. I don't have kids, so what do I know?
All right. Here we go again. Now we get to see Juliana's reaction. Yeah. She deserves all of this. Yeah, she really does. This is a reaction that you would expect. You know, this is like
she's going through the tunnel. And here comes a good one. This is Mike Chiesa comes up right now, right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's Reed Harris.
He's next.
And there's Chiesa. He breaks down. Chiesa tells the story that him and Juliana started at the same gym in Spokane probably, I think, around 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and he said a week apart. So literally, they've kind of been on this type of a journey together. And think about how much she just inspired him. I would argue that if you told me, hey, Chiesa fights Usman the same night Pena fights Amanda, who's got a better chance to win? I'd probably go Chiesa, I think, because if he connects on the chin, he might be able to just knock her out, you know. I didn't kind of see that type of one-punch power from Juliana. Juliana would require more of a game plan that, like, what took place over a few minutes of time, taking Amanda's best shot, you know, and then putting some on her own, maybe getting a takedown and going for submission. But that probably is going to motivate Chiesa. It's going to motivate a lot of females. You saw how much Miesha Tate was into it. No hint of jealousy at all, because Miesha's already been a champion at that division, but that was her coach, you know, and they were friends, and now Miesha, out of respect, is even entertaining 125.
Mm-hmm. You know what, I'm gonna look at something here. You guide us through. I just want to.
Okay, so at this point, Michael Chiesa is just kind of giving his thoughts on it. You can see he's still emotional, his eyes are watering, he's still trembling, shaking. He's really, really moved by all this, and he's taking a second to compose himself, actually. Now, if people don't know this, but Chiesa jumped the fence from, you know, he's a front row fighter, basically, and he jumps the fence, and he wants, I think he just wants to rush into the octagon and be with his teammate. In the octagon, they usually allow one person in first. You'll see the officials, commission, and then a cut man for each side, cut man or cut woman for each side. And then after a little bit of time, I think the designated coaches are in. But if you'll notice, when there is a title fight, you see families come in, managers come in, teammates. Like, you know, when DC would win, you would see Rockhold in regular street clothes. He wasn't part of his corner, but he would be in there, and so would Kane. When one of the guys from Dominance wins, eventually Ali makes his way in there, or Adi Attar, you know, from Paradigm. Of course, we've seen families, entire families come in, Valentina Shevchenko and her mom, and, you know, so there's all form, there's different forms of people that are allowed at some point. And I think that's what he wanted to be a part of. But because of the way he jumped the fence, and I think he went about it the wrong way, he actually was escorted out, and somehow he managed to talk his way out of it and probably apologize and say, look, that was my bad. So he's kind of dealing with all that. And I think he finds himself able to come back in and be with Julie. Excuse me, Juliana Pena. But for a moment there, he almost got kicked out of the arena. Or if he did, he got kicked out for a small moment of time. By the way, right now, Juliana Pena is taking a call from Hickson Gracie. I thought that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. She's basically at all kinds of moments here saying thank you, thank you, thank you, you know, as she's walking the hallways. Now they switch to Poirier and Charles Oliveira. You want to pause it for a second?
Sure.
All right. Was there anything you wanted to add to, or are we done with Pena and Amanda?
No, I think that was just probably the most frustrating part for me. And I did want to also talk about the Kiesa moment. Man, you can't ask for like a better teammate or a better friend if your triumph brings them to that type of emotion. Mm-hmm. Then you know that person really cares about you. And we don't have that many people in this world that will do those types of things or have those types of emotion. And it kind of makes me mad, George, because the one friend that we did have that you know would be like that is our good buddy Steve, who passed away. So, yeah, these friends are very hard to come by.
Yeah, that's really, really true. And by the way, Juliana Pena's daughter makes an appearance. She's a little bit older. She looks to me to be more in like the 4 range. And what? I think Reagan Nunes looks more like maybe a year and a half. And where would I stand on that? I think I'd still leave her back at the hotel. But she's clearly telling her mom, you're the champ, you're the champ. So she probably realized what happened. I suppose if maybe the kid's in the seat and you're warming up and there's just no FaceTime or nothing like that, then maybe you could pull that one off. I've seen Max Holloway's kid devastated when Max loses, but I've also seen him super elated when he wins. So I don't know. Maybe I'm on the fence on this, but I don't know. The little baby that's really not going to know all this, I think if you already gave her some shine on the first one and she's all over embedded, I kind of maybe get wanting to share that, but I don't know that I would do that every single trip. Frank Mir loved to be around his kids, absolutely loved it. And then there's other fighters that I know that everyone stays home. I am laser focused. I can't have everyone around me.
Yeah. Hit it?
Yeah, so we're at the 7-minute mark, and this is Oliveira versus Poirier. The fight just ended. Oliveira is real casual and strolling around the octagon. Poirier's still on his butt. They show Gaethje. They show Rose. And this is where Oliveira and Poirier kind of have an exchange. And Poirier actually tells him, I'm going to donate $20,000 to any charity or to the city where you're from. You can do anything you want with it. The translator there is telling him, you know, what's going on. It kind of looks like it could be contentious, but it's not because, you know, it's so loud and they're probably screaming at each other, but there was a lot of respect right here in this moment.
Yeah. You know, Charles Oliveira, it's funny because, you know, you match him up with Justin Gaethje and I don't know if that he's going to have the respect that he deserves. But boy, beating Dustin Poirier the way he did, we need to stop looking at him as Charles Oliveira from a couple years ago. And
yep.
I realize that the kid's just evolved. He's just gotten better, not just physically, but mentally too.
No, yeah, perfectly said. I think too many of us do focus on the guy that used to miss weight, the guy that took losses in big fights at 55, 45. He's a proper champ. Ever since the Paul Felder fight, which he almost won that one, by the way, he has rattled off 10 in a row with 9 finishes. Incredible. Now, the one thing he always had was that submission record. You know, even if he never became champ, you'd go, oh, man, the guy that really got down when it came down submissions, oh, that's Charles Oliveira. But now he just built up a formidable wrestling game, striking game, and he just doesn't quit in fights, which is something he was accused of a long time ago. That was, you know, mentally breaking, and then eventually it led to the downfall in fights. Now they're in the back locker room. Dan Lambert, the owner of ATT, the co-founder of ATT, he is walking Dustin Poirier back. Poirier is obviously devastated. I forget this guy's name. The guy that was with Charles Oliveira. I know he's a prominent Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. And I know he's fine, but I keep forgetting his name. That's Gia Santos, one of his coaches. Oliveira's walking out. This is when someone snags his glasses.
Yeah.
I guess he got them back because he's wearing them now. Oh, now, in this moment right here, when I heard the whole thing, Gaethje was very complimentary and respectful. I don't understand why Oliveira kind of had a problem with it. I don't know if you saw the news lately, but he kind of felt like he was two-faced. Now, has Gaethje probably done media since then and said, oh, yeah, I plan on fucking this guy up or whatever? Yeah, you can't use that and also apply it to this. This is an isolated moment where one guy beat someone. And remember, Gaethje goes, lost to Poirier. So, you know, Gaethje probably has a lot of respect for Oliveira for winning this fight. And I thought he said all the right things. I think Oliveira really needs to take a step back on that one.
You know, but the thing is, like, so much is lost in translation. You know, like, if you don't speak the language, people are telling you what this guy did. And you have to rely on their interpretation of what happened, right? Oh, he came in and he was so arrogant. And yeah, he said this and he said it like that and said it. And it could be that he didn't, you know? So that one's tough. But come on, Charles, you got to get in there and learn some English, I guess.
For the love of God, please do so. Don't be Aldo. Anyway, that's the thrill and the agony. And I guess now goes, oh, you want me to pull it up? I can pull up the 21 moments that in 2021. I thought that was a really, really cool article because the funnest part about it was just the idea concept and then how everyone chimed in. You know, how many times have we come in here on a Monday or a Thursday and said, can you believe this Twitter spat? Can you believe what so-and-so said? Can you believe so-and-so got arrested? And this is the exact opposite.
Well, it didn't start as 21. It started as hey, you guys got some ideas on cool things that happened in 2021, but so many started pouring in that I think we had gotten to somewhere around like 18 or 19. And then I can't remember who said it, but somebody said, hey, 20, 21 and 21 sounds cool. We ended up there.
It does. Yeah, it sounds like one when I'm trying to lose weight. 211 by 211, which is February 11th. I need to weigh 211. But anyway,
do you remember? All right. Do you remember no crown in seven till 2011?
No.
Do you remember that?
No.
Well, the second time we brought him up on the show, but our good buddy Woody had some bad moments with crown in seven, and then he came out with the slogan, "No crown in seven till 2011."
Got it.
2010 back then.
All right, so number one, I don't think he ranked them. This is just things that happen. I don't think it's in the sequence of the year. I don't think there's the significance. I think these are just ideas splattered to the wall, but I think you guys will like them. Here's one. GSP and Nick Diaz shake hands. I don't know if this was the first time they had seen each other, but you know, these two fought before and they had a real contentious rivalry. Not that they had to pull them apart after the fight was over when they fought, but you know, sometimes fighters just go in separate directions and really don't have a chance to, you know, squash it and just relive a moment. But these two did, and it was captured. I guess it happened at UFC, the one with Valentina and Lauren Murphy. So that would be 266 here in Las Vegas GSP's a cornerman, and Nick Diaz was there. Nick Diaz was, I think, fighting that card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a cool moment. You know, like, even past everything that happened in that fight, it just seemed like, and it never really came from GSP. I mean, we all know who GSP is. He's just the most chill guy on the planet. But Nick Diaz just never really took that too well. So to see him be the one to come over and do that, just kind of shows. I think we all noticed, too, in his last fight, Nick has grown a little bit, I think, emotionally. And I don't think he'll ever be to the point where people want him to be. But I think he has matured in a Nick Diaz sense.
Yeah. It was just a 3-second handshake, but I think it carried a lot of weight. The next one was Glover Teixeira finally wins UFC gold. This is a guy that started off, he was well known as Chuck Liddell's training partner. He was living in the United States. And I think, folks, don't quote me on this, but I think what happened was he overextended his welcome. So when he eventually went back to Brazil, and hopefully was on his own, I don't know, I don't think he was deported, but when he did go back, because his career had kind of hit a standstill, that was one of the reasons I believe the UFC just couldn't bring him back. We all knew he was one of the best non-UFC, not signed to the UFC talents out there, despite the division, doesn't matter what division, but for sure in the light heavyweight division. But every time we were asked about him, no, he's in Brazil. He hasn't been able to clear his work visa or something like that. And I think that's kind of what happened. Eventually, he does get here. And he had his title shot once against John Jones. It didn't go his way. But the guy just kept plugging away, probably fighting all the names we're so used to hearing about. Latifi, maybe OSP, Jimmy Manoa, Volcanoes, all the names you could probably think about that were kind of contenders in the last 10 years. He did it until he slowly started working and padding onto this fight win streak that he's on. And he took out Jan Blachowicz at age 42. That's just amazing, man. He never gave up, and he became one of the oldest champions ever.
You know, I think the first time we met him, George, was at Total Combat in San Diego. I can't remember the name of that arena. But it's so funny because when we so many things we take for granted now. Like, there's MMA here just about every weekend in Las Vegas. And we probably miss at least half of it. But back then, we were so starved for MMA that if somebody just went, there's MMA, and it's within an hour and a half, we would go, right? The Coliseum.
What's Total Combat? I don't remember the name. San Diego?
No, I think that's what it's called, Total Combat. It was in San Diego. It's where Nick Diaz fought Jeremy Jackson. They had quite a few. And I think that's the first time we met him.
That is old school.
Yeah. And so yeah, I think that's the first time we met him. And he was very nice. Shook our hand, whatever. And yeah. But that's how we kind of knew a little bit more about him. Because I think that's when, at the time, I think it was not Josh Gross, Jeff Sherwood and Chuck Liddell. I think we were like, yeah, dude, that guy's the guy. That's the guy. His legend kind of grew online, you know.
He also has a 5-second knockout, just like George Masvidal, but it's outside the UFC. But I remember seeing that one, and it was against George Oliveira, who was part of Shootbox. Goes, do you remember we went to a BMW in Los Angeles where they were having a Shootbox signing or something? I met that guy there, George Oliveira, and everybody's like, he's the next one or something like that. But he got shut down by Glover Teixeira in 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Lake Tahoe or something like that. All right, another one. Dustin Poirier offers $20,000 to the charity of Charles Oliveira's choice. We mentioned this earlier when we were talking about the thrill and the agony, but that was also a feel-good moment in 2021. The next one is Bisping Rockhold squashed their beef. So Rockhold's still an active fighter. He hasn't fought in a while, but he trains occasionally at Ruka Sport in Costa Mesa, California. And that's where Michael Bisping kind of finished his career, both of them under the tutelage of Jason Perillo. That's kind of his gym. BJ Penn trains there. Now I think Marlon Vera and Mackenzie Dern are there as well. But that's the gym in Costa Mesa where they, where Rockhold was training. And I think he had his dog there. Is she Lucy? Do you remember her name?
I don't remember.
I guess it doesn't matter too much right now. But In comes Michael Bisping. I think just to pop into his old gym. And Bisping, I think, did a good job of messing around with Luke, you know, joking, teasing, to where Luke finally cracked a smile. And I think they're just from that day on probably just wasn't any more tension like they did have back in the day.
Yeah, that was cool. You know, that rivalry got pretty heated. Some bad things were said. But to see them shake hands like that, you don't really see that a lot in different sports. To there, it's like rivalries go to the death. You know, in MMA, it seems like they kind of fade away after a while.
Right. Burt Watson's back with in a prominent role in mixed martial arts. He was for a long time the UFC's site coordinator. And, you know, others will call him the hype man. Others will call him the man in charge of making sure everyone stays in line and makes weight. All that. It really applies to Burt Watson. We got close to Burt because he would do his show anytime he was in Vegas. And usually Vegas came, those guys came to Vegas, you know, four or five times a year. And he got so used to it that he would call and say, hey, I'm available on this day. And he'd come in and just tell some great behind the scenes stories. Eventually, after a UFC in LA, I think it's when Zingano lost to Rousey, he had a little bit of a butting heads with a UFC executive and he basically quit. So he had kind of been away. You know, we saw him dip in and out and coordinate a few other shows. I think he did a bare knuckle. I think he did LFC versus RFA before they merged to become LFA. He came from boxing. I don't know if he ever went back and did any of that, but he kind of kept his distance a little bit. Now, of course, he's a kind of a part of the team at Junkie doing the Legend series. But more than anything, he's back with a major organization. He's the site coordinator for Bellator MMA. He started this year, and he's doing great.
I used to love those segments where he would come into the studio when there was something at Mandalay Bay. But one that I remember was him just sitting down. He had only been there for like 10 minutes. And he took a call, and then he just goes, he did what? And then he goes, I got to go, baby. Took off. It had to do with a microwave, I think, at the end of the day or something like that. I don't remember.
I believe it. All right, the next one is, do you remember the lady that had a sign, Habib, please stop for a photo? And I think she knew he was in town, cornering or something. This was when most of the fights were still at the Apex. And she was, I think, standing outside the Apex holding up that sign. And that was her birthday wish. She was a 66-year-old lady. Well, Dana White arranged for her to go to the UFC PI or the UFC headquarters, which is attached to the PI. And she got to meet him there. But then he gave her tickets to go to an event. But, yeah, she got her wish. She got to meet Habib and got tickets to an event. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool thing, because that would be kind of cool if anybody really did that. If you don't know how hot it gets in Las Vegas, it can get pretty hot outside. And she was just out there. So the fact that it was kind of an older woman, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Now that I look at it, it looks like they're at someone's house. Maybe they arranged to meet at Ali's house.
Yeah. Cause Ali was doing, he did like a dominance media day from his house. Yeah. So that's where they were.
All right. Here's another one. Marino and Diaz, an unexpected bromance. So that's Brandon Marino, and he's challenging Davison Figueroa for the title. He's the challenger at UFC 263. And on that same card is Leon Edwards versus Nate Diaz. Like it says in the article, sometimes you'll see these fighters on the dais, and they don't know each other, but sometimes they'll giggle at each other's jokes or maybe just politely shake hands. I'm sure they've all heard of each other, but these guys more or less kind of bonded. And for Nate, it's more big from Nate. I think Brandon's probably a fan of every fighter in the UFC, whereas Nate, I think, only likes five people on the planet, you know? His brother, Jake Shields, and three other people. Who knows? Well, apparently one of them is Brandon Marino. And for Brandon, I just think that's huge, because say what you will about the Diaz brothers, they may not have won UFC gold. Nate Diaz never won a major title. I think I've incorrectly said in the past that he won the WEC title, but he didn't. What he did win was the Ultimate Fighter on a stacked season. Nick did win the Strikeforce welterweight title, and I believe the LAXC welterweight title as well. So he has won major titles, but Nate never did. But that doesn't mean they weren't two of the biggest stars in the history of the sport. Nate and Conor McGregor broke UFC 100's record for most pay-per-views at the time. It was 1.6 million. They sold 1.65 for the set fight, the one he lost. I can only imagine how big Nate would be if he had gone 2-0 against Conor. But he's still big, and he's a gangster, and I'm sure that made Brandon Moreno's day.
Yeah, it's probably pretty cool to get acknowledgement for someone like that.
Yeah. The next one is Moreno. Speaking of the same guy, Brandon Moreno makes history. He becomes the first Mexican-born UFC champion. So not Mexican-American like Cain Velasquez, who was born in the United States, but Mexican-born UFC champion. That's tremendous. For a big combat sports rich country like Mexico, a big sports rich country like Mexico that just loves their athletes, this was big. And we had told Brandon many times that we've had him on the show, one day I think you're going to become champion. You have a good chance to become champion, and you will meet the president of Mexico. And sure enough, it happened about a month after he won it.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Here's another one. Cesar Chavez, Julio Cesar Chavez, he sends his regards to Brandon Moreno. The fact that he, I think, uttered Brandon Moreno's name and knew who he was, that alone is pretty big. So, guys, this guy's an icon in boxing. Mm-hmm. And this guy's probably, dare I say it, maybe the biggest athlete to ever come out of Mexico, I think. I mean, I'm sure there might be a few soccer pushbacks, perhaps. But he's probably undeniably in a in their version of a Mount Rushmore for sure.
Oh yeah, he's gotta be. I mean, Hugo Sanchez is really huge too, right? But Julio Cesar Chavez is, he just has this different type of love, and it's because he represented the entire country, but not just because that's where he came from, but more like this is our fighting spirit all wrapped into one guy. He never would quit. I mean, he was just awesome, incredible, technical. He could get dirty if he needed to. So, yeah, to get compliments from a guy like that is just huge, absolutely huge. Like you said, him just knowing your name, even if he faked it, you know, when people pretend like they know you, but they don't know you, even that would have been cool. But the fact that he actually tuned in and knew who this kid was, fuck. Brandon must have been on cloud nine.
Yeah, that was two big ones for him. Nate and Caesar, Julio Cesar Chavez, but make no mistake, the Julio Cesar Chavez one probably put him down to his knees, man. Like, you know, that's gotta be, that's an idol to kids all over Mexico. He probably didn't know who Nate was until he was, you know, 18 years old, maybe, or whatever. But by the time you're 3 or 4 years old, around that time, this guy used to sell out stadiums. He fought Greg Haugen in the big stadium there in Mexico City called Azteca, where they seat 110,000. It's like 8,000 feet altitude, and they actually had 110,000 people there to watch that fight. So just goes to show you how beloved Julio Cesar Chavez is. His kid is the one who lost to Anderson Silva. The Last Emperor goes, scored a KO in Moscow, and you're 45, man. That was the perfect time to sail off in the sunset. He sailed off in the sunset once before, but he's come back, and he's made some money, and he's won some fights. But apparently there's another fight left on his contract, and he wants to do it, and maybe he'll shut me up. Maybe he'll sail off into the sunset at that one. But, you know, being that it was in Moscow, and again, he is 45, you just would have thought this would have been it.
Yeah. That one was particularly special just because, you know, so many people count him out. But for him to get a victory in the old Fedor fashion is really, really cool. And, you know, Timothy Johnson's a tough cat. A lot of people don't give him the credit that he deserves, and that was a really good win for him.
Yeah. Anderson Silva not only beat Julio Cesar Chavez, he also beat Tito Ortiz. He actually had a good year lacing up the 8 ounces.
Yeah. Anderson Silva, for the longest time, has always just been somehow, some way attached to boxing, you know, usually through Roy Jones Jr. throughout the years, just because of his defense, the way he would slip punches, roll punches. And then when you add in his offense, people will go, man, this guy would probably be a pretty decent boxer. So for him to come full circle and get a couple of those types of fights in. It's really cool.
He also, I believe, is 45 or 46. So that even makes it more tremendous because he beat a proper boxer in Julio Cesar Chavez. I know he's had his problems with addiction and stuff, but he's won his fair share of fights and he's trained. He's lifelong. So that was a huge, huge win for MMA against boxing for Anderson Silva himself. And then, of course, him beating Tito in 81 seconds didn't really surprise anybody. What did surprise everyone was when he gave up his first class ticket for Tito's, I don't know if they're married, but I guess we'll say his significant other, the former UFC Octagon girl, Amber Nicole.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that just kind of goes to show what kind of person Anderson Silva is.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right. So here you go for all the hippies out there. The USADA and NAC finally came around on marijuana. And of course, I don't smoke it. So, you know, I don't celebrate in these things as much, but I do understand that this was a long time coming. I don't believe we ever saw that this enhanced anyone's performance like actual steroids do. And with the fact that it's got so many, you know, medicinal benefits and the world's kind of come around on it, I'm glad they finally got around to just putting this one to the side and not taxing the fighters when they're, you know, when they have either a certain amount of levels or have anything at all. This actually probably curtailed some fighters' careers back in the days. Probably one Nick Diaz, who's been mentioned here. You could probably start with him, but yeah, this is no longer on board as of July for both Nevada and USADA. USADA did it earlier in the year.
Yeah, how long are you going to fight that battle? I mean, like, it just didn't really make much sense at a certain point. And for them to finally come around, that was a big deal in the sport.
I remember Keith Kaiser used to say, well, there's thoughts that maybe, you know, because you're high, you might be able to take more damage. And all I did was nod and go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I mean, it sounded believable, but this was 12 years ago. And like I said, I don't really smoke it, so I wouldn't know. But the more you kind of learned about it, you realize, no, I don't think so. More than anything, Nick Diaz just needed this, I think, to be a member of society. Like, he had social anxiety, and I think this is what relaxed him enough to be able to just get through a press conference.
Yeah. And you know, that's what some people would argue is, right, like, well, yeah, I have it too, and I could do this to get rid of that. So, I don't know, man. But it just came to a point where you could tell that the struggle just wasn't worth it. It just didn't make any sense anymore.
I forgot what I was going to say, but I forgot. If it comes back to me, I'll say it. But yeah, let's move on. Laura Sanko debuts as a commentator. We've seen her be a host. We've seen her do the, you know, be the reporter, like the sideline reporter when fighters are walking out. But what we've never seen in the era that has been, you know, Zuffa and now IMG, is a cage side commentator who's a female. We got to give credit to, what was her name? Kathy Long.
Mm-hmm.
She was UFC 1, right?
Yeah.
So technically it had been.
Oh, looks like George froze there for a second. But yeah, he's right. You know, UFC 1, that was Jim Brown, Kathy Long. They had both been on that broadcast. But the thing with Laura Sanko is, it's not so much like a UFC thing or an MMA thing. It wasn't they were against females doing it. It's just you needed to have one that was good enough to fill that role. And Laura Sanko was good enough to fill that role. And that's why she got it. She 100% earned it and deserved it.
Am I back? How do I sound? Okay. All right. So, yeah, I heard you fill in. And Goz needs to get some credit for this because I think he's one of the ones that first put it in the ear of the UFC. And I think it, even if it was just a little snowball that he threw at what? John Anik, you threw the snowball at him, right?
Yeah, I think I might have texted her that day. I told her, hold my beer or something like that. Watch this. So, yeah.
Yeah, even if it's just a little snowball that you threw at Anik and he kind of dodged a little bit of it, it went downhill and it became an avalanche, and it happened, man. That's awesome. All right. Weidman and Silva clear the air after leg break. So everyone and their mother has a podcast now, including Chris Weidman, and I think his is called Won't Back Down, and he had Anderson Silva on the show. And now they kind of share an injury because Weidman cracked or broke Anderson Silva's leg. I don't remember the UFCs exactly, but when Anderson Silva was defending, he cracked, he got his leg checked. I think Ray Longo called it the destruction. It was a defense. He noticed that in the first fight, Weidman was taking a lot of leg kicks, and so he wanted to work on properly checking these kicks. And it worked because he broke Anderson Silva's leg in the second fight. By the way, Anderson looked good. He was in shape. He looked sharp. He looked like a guy that wanted to get his title back, but his leg cracked. And then here we go. I think it was this year, Chris Weidman's fighting Uriah Hall, and Uriah Hall did the same thing to him.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of a weirder scenario where you this just doesn't happen that much in our sport. And to find two people that actually went through the same thing and one did it to the other. Just getting two rivals to just talk, you know, regardless of how that fight ended or whatever, that would be difficult. But the fact that you tie all the other stuff in and the conversations they had and how positive Anderson Silva was, is like, he's such a cool cat. But actually, both of them are pretty cool.
It's almost like if you were to just pull a statistician aside and say, hey, what are the chances that one guy would break someone's leg, but then years later he'd break his leg? He'd probably, you know, go to work, punch it in the computer, and then come back and say something like what you hear. Well, there's a greater chance of him getting hit by lightning and then becoming president of the United States. You know, like it literally just seems like that. You know, there's been the
Corey Hill.
Corey Hill, Anderson Silva, yeah. Chris Weidman. And
I think Tyrone Spong had that as well.
Tyrone Spong. His wasn't even in the UFC, but yeah. And then I guess Conor McGregor, in a way, it's just his was more when he was planting, you know, that right. The leg kind of broke, but it looked like the damage was being accumulated throughout the fight.
But you got to understand, like, you could be at a bar and somebody could go, hey, see those guys over there? Hey, Wally, see this guy over here? He's been to the moon, too. You probably have a better chance of something like that happening than what.
Yeah, happened. I agree. Francis Ngannou, not only did he win the title, he then went back to Cameroon, to his village where he grew up, and he took back the belt and basically, you know, celebrated it with his hometown. I think that's tremendous. It's called Douala, is his hometown in Cameroon. This is a guy that went from Cameroon, and a lot of Africans, when they try and cross, you know, into Europe, they go through Spain. And apparently he was jailed in Spain, eventually made his way to France because they speak the common language there. And then he was in France at the MMA factory for 5 years. So when you hear, oh, him and Ciryl Gane used to be teammates. Yeah, he was part of that gym. Then eventually he settled in Vegas about 5 years ago. And now he's the world champ. But he got to share that moment. He got a hero's welcome when he went back to Douala, Cameroon in Africa.
Love seeing those types of things.
Yeah, I agree. this one, tongue-in-cheek, sarcasm, I don't know. Diego Sanchez breaks free of Joshua Fabia. What's funny is I think most of the MMA world did celebrate this. Almost like I think Sanchez could have got a hero's welcome.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, we're being a little cheeky, I guess. But, hey, man, it was a big thing. It was a big deal. And I think people who really have come to love Diego Sanchez for what he's done for our sport, we could see he was being hurt, you know, little by little. And it's really tough to see something like that happen. So that was a good thing for that relationship to end.
What sucked is it cost Sanchez his job at the UFC. I think he had one more fight left. And let's face it, if he had won, he probably could go into Dana's office and go, hello, UFC one, Pioneer, just won my fight, give me another one. You know, and Dana White would probably go, yeah, you won, let's do it. But I think this became such a big thing that they cut him and paid him for his last fight when they had the opportunity to do that legally. And then weeks later, these two broke up. They were no longer coach/manager, I guess, and fighter. And before anyone tries to run with this quote, yes, he's even addressed it himself. Diego even addressed himself. I don't know if you ever heard it goes, but they had thought they were a gay couple. So I didn't mean that when I said broke up. But Diego eventually, I think, heard those rumors. He goes, no, we're not gay. He goes, he was just my mentor or whatever. Next up here, Schaub, Brendan Schaub. He rescues kids in a deadly crash. This was in like the North Hollywood area where he lives. And I guess a SUV and an 18-wheeler collided. Brendan Schaub was on his way to a party, I think is how he tells the story, and he sees this explosion, gets out of his car, goes over there, realizes that somebody has already perished in the SUV, probably the mom, I guess, or one of the parents. My mind's a little foggy, but sorry, this story just went up today. But he sees four children, and he helps rescue them. And then takes off. For a while, the poor guy, people thought he was lying, you know, until there was eyewitness testimony and it was corroborated. So he really, really was a hero. And he never really told it in a way like, check me out, everyone, you know, give me a cape. No, I mean, he told it in a casual way of how he came up on this horrific scene and, you know, was able to think on the spot and save some lives, too.
Brendan is not, I don't want to say he's weird or strange. He's just a different cat, but he's a good guy at heart, I think. And I know for there's no way for even a split second that this guy not think about going to go do that. You know, he's just that type of person. And props to him.
Yeah. Did I tell you my story about the CHP?
When you were on Real CHPs or whatever the fuck that show was? Or
no. That one was called U.S. Marshals, but this one was when I went for Christmas just a few days ago. Did I tell you that?
No.
I'll share it with the audience real fast. Well, this is going to take some time. This is going to take 5 minutes, maybe 3 minutes. Are you okay with it?
Sure.
All right. You know, when you pull away from state line going in the direction towards California, you can kind of look back and just see the state line hotels getting shorter and shorter. So then you get up to a certain point of the hill. I think you turn right and then you start zigzagging a little and you get lost in the mountains. That's usually where you lose a phone call until you start going downhill towards Baker, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I'm now driving, and this is relevant to what Brendan Schaub did, but I guess it's the opposite. I'm driving, and then all of a sudden I just take note of an 18-wheeler that's parked on the shoulder. That shouldn't sound too weird to some, but to me it does, because between Vegas and LA, there's a few rest stops, and then there's a few cities, and there's a lot of off and on ramps to smaller exits. And usually if someone's in an 18-wheeler and they just want to rest, they'll pull off on one of these exits. If not, you see them all lined up at rest stops, right? But this one was just kind of off to the side, and I don't know why I took notice of it, but this is how it happened. I just see it there, and I go, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden goes, I did a quick turn to my right. And because of the way I had just turned and because there was the side of a mountain blocking it, I saw a CHP SUV. It looked like it had just crashed and it was on its butt. So its two front tires were up in the air. They weren't rotating, but imagine that's probably what you would see in a movie or a TV show where they're rotating and maybe there's a little bit of smoke, but it was on its butt. Now, here's why that was like interesting to me, because if you crash kind of like into the side of a wall or another car, what happens? Your car scrunches together, you know, like an accordion, you know, like there's that type of impact. This one, I don't know how it did that, goes. It was almost like he said, I'm going to try and go up this hill. And he went and realized he couldn't do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so as I'm driving, what the fuck? I said that to myself. And I had received many messages from Dad and from Juliet saying, hey, there's a storm warning. Get down here. You never know if the Cajon Pass may close. And so in my mind, I was like watching that and wind and rain and everything. And so as I'm driving that, I see the rig, you know, I'm like, oh, why is he here? And then I go, oh, shit, look at that guy. And as I'm driving, I'm like, whoa, whoa. You know, I'm trying to realize what's happening. Like I start looking around me to see if, you know, like a lot of things are going through my head. And as I do that, I look on the left side And the left side's elevated and higher than the right side at this point. And there's people standing up there kind of looking down, almost as if to say that they had just seen something and they had to get out and go, what the hell just happened? You know, and they're kind of like looking down below. Once I see that, I see a CHP coming behind them, and it looks like he's going down the shoulder, like, get out of the way, get out of the way. You know, and he needs to basically cross over and get to where he's at. In my mind, what I think is somehow that CHP was on that side and went down the hill and then went up and ran into the side of the wall. All I can think of is he lost control via he fell asleep, he got sideswiped or something like that. I don't think he would be in that type of a chase, but maybe he was. Maybe he was chasing someone. That person did the same thing but was able to navigate the hairpin turn and go the other way, and he wasn't, lost control and crashed. I'm also thinking, by how much did I miss this? You know, like if I had not stopped at a red light, you know, like in those 30 seconds or 1 minute, could this have been me or whatever? As I'm gauging all this, I then think, man, I wonder if I should pull over and get to him. But you know how there's a lot of room in between exits? There's no way I'm going to go to the next exit and come back because all them other cars are way ahead of me. The CHP is already coming this way. Those cars are starting to slow down, so any heroes would already be way ahead of me. I can pull over and then run back, but guess what I can't do? Run. I can pull over and go in reverse about – I've gone about a quarter of a mile at this point, but that would be a little dangerous on the shoulder to just go in reverse. And so in my mind, I just thought it ain't going to be me today, you know? Now, I think if I had maybe seen what happened, like let's say the car went in front of me and banged into the wall just before me, I probably would have pulled over just to see if there's someone I could help or save or who knows what. I didn't see no smoke. No tires were rotating. I don't even know if the CHP was still in there. I don't even know if the truck driver pulled over because he saw it and he was already on his way to helping or what. But yeah, dude, that was a trip.
Did you read about it? Did it say anything like
that? No, I forgot. I told Dad, and I go, when I get home, I'll Google it, you know, and I never did, but I'll try to after the show and see what may have happened. All right. So good on Brendan Schaub. I didn't do what Brendan did, but hopefully that guy was okay. All right. Let's finish up here. Jake Paul puts his money where his mouth is. That was another feel-good moment. Why did he do that? He donated $5,000 to UFC fighter Sarah Alpar's GoFundMe campaign. I don't know if you guys remember that earlier in the year, training camp fees, living expenses, and this guy gave her that generous donation. She thanked him for it.
Yeah, very nice of him to do.
Valentina Shevchenko goes Hollywood. She was in that movie with Halle Berry that came out a few months ago. She had a prominent role. She's basically the heel in a movie called Bruise, where Halle Berry's an MMA fighter, and these two seem to not only have become co-stars, but also besties.
I think that's the closest Valentina's come to losing in like the last couple of years, right?
Pretty much. And Matt Erickson had a great interview with them. If you want to check it out, go to youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. Rare cameo from Matt Erickson nowadays. He doesn't do too much video, but he should. He's great at it. Dr. Pepper versus Reese's. That was a big deal, and I think Goz definitely helped fuel that fire. Adrian Yanez and Randy Costa, both huge fans of, respectively, Yanez, Dr. Pepper, and Randy Costa, Reese's, the chocolates. And those guys engaged in, you know, joking around about having side bets. They had a great fight, and a lot of this was born on MMA Junkie Radio through Goz.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun to be a part of that. Nolan did a great interview with them, too, at the end.
ATT takes over AEW. AEW is a smaller wrestling promotion, but it's based down in South Florida. And because of the pandemic, they've kind of been, you know, a little permanent spot there. And Dan Lambert, a longtime pro wrestling fan, he's kind of injected himself in these storylines. And he's brought over a few fighters like Kayla Harrison, Amanda Nunes, George Masvidal, Junior Dos Santos, Andre Arlovsky, and they've kind of had a little bit of a rivalry with Jericho and his guys, Chris Jericho and his guys, and I think Junior Dos Santos may even kind of have a future in this. So that's been kind of fun, and Dan's done a good job on the mic.
Yeah, it's been really cool to watch. And you're right, Junior Dos Santos is the other ones have just kind of come in for their little moments, but Junior's more a wrestler.
The popular show Hot Ones has featured a few MMA fighters this year: Kamaru Usman, Dustin Poirier, and of course the Black Beast himself, Derek Lewis. That's been pretty cool to watch. I just like the show in general, but it's kind of cool seeing our lot get some love.
Derek Lewis's story of what happened after that show is hilarious.
I haven't heard it. Where does he tell it?
I think it was at a press conference or something. But to sum it up, basically he had to take a dump, but he was going to get on a plane and he wanted to do it there. So he held it. And then when he got off the plane, he didn't want to do it at the airport. So he said he barely made it to a gas station, but he said it was awful.
Reminds me of those fettuccine caliente craps, man. Those were fucking nightmares if we got a bad batch of it at the Tustin Brewery. And what's funny is me and some buddies, we used to go maybe not once a month, but maybe once every other month. And like six or eight of us would go, and most of us would come back and go, "Woo, that was good," you know, but you survived. And then there'd be that one, like, "Where's so-and-so? Where's Danny?" You know, "I don't know, man. It's like his third trip to the bath." It would just hit you wrong. And all I had to do with a little bit extra spice, a little extra kick, and that was that. Goes, I do want to throw one that didn't get added, so I guess it's my unofficial honorable mention. I was happy to see Jenny Andrade back on the catwalk, becoming or being an octagon girl again. She became a mom, and I don't know, other than Ariane Celeste, any other ones that became moms. I think Jenny became a mom before she did, but I hadn't really heard of these octagon girls becoming moms and then doing this. I think Edith LaBelle may have already been a mom before she got contracted, but I'm talking about like taking that maternity leave while on this type of a job. So that, the pandemic, and I think a work visa made it very difficult. And she was a three-time, she's popular. She was a three-time Octagon Girl of the Year. And then the only time she would be able to do this is when the show was in South America or Latin America, I guess, Mexico. She wasn't able to do the stateside shows anymore. And she could do Abu Dhabi. But the problem is, you know how the first time when they were in Abu Dhabi, they were there for 3 weeks, and the next time they were there for a month, and they just hammered out a bunch of shows. I asked her, I go, "How come you can't do those?" She says, "I'd have to leave my son. He's too young. I can't leave him for 3 weeks or a month at a time." But when they just did the one show, which was the Glover Teixeira and Jan Blachowicz, she was able to set aside 3 days and fly down there and do it. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, props to her.
Yeah. Did you have any that didn't get added that you felt maybe should have or you want to personally add?
I'd have to go through the list, but actually we got to sign off because that thing I've been working on, I have to approve it. I just got the draft of it.
All right. Well, I think we did enough. Hopefully you enjoyed that, folks. Kind of a little different twist there to end the year. Happy New Year to everybody. Be safe. We'll see you all next Monday with another edition of MMA Junkie Radio to start the year. And we'll put the finishing touches on, you know, the awards and the big stuff that happened, because to be fair, there's still about 36 hours for someone to done fucked up or someone to do something nice. Anyway, in the meantime, go out there and be a champion. We'll see you soon.